Hello again, Trippers. Alex Zane here, film journalist, movie fan, and your host for another glorious episode of A Trip to the Movies. Thank you for joining me today. I'm currently in our podcast studio a mile beneath the streets of London. And in a moment, my guest this week, the brilliant Katie O'Brien, will be taking us on her perfect trip to the movies. Thanks for downloading the podcast. This episode is brought to you by Odeon, because if you're going to watch a movie, it has to be at an Odeon Lux. For me, there is no better place to experience the mesmerizing magic of the big screen. And when I say big, I mean crystal clear, four times sharper, larger than life, I sense big. A place where you can recline in luxury whilst sipping on your favorite tipple as you immerse yourself in the all-consuming power of the story, enriched by epic Dolby Atmos that'll make your spine tingle and the hairs on the back of your neck stand up. Now that is how to experience a movie, and there's no better feeling. You can book your Odeon Lux experience at odeon.co.uk or via the My Odeon app. Odeon say, we make movies better, and they're not wrong. Also, if you'd like to watch today's interview in glorious Technicolor, head over to our YouTube channel where the video goes up a few days after the pod. And for all the latest updates or to get in touch with us, you'll find us at Trip to Movies Pod on all social media. Right then, if you're ready, let's do this. Hello and welcome to the show where each week a special guest takes us on their perfect trip to the movies. This week we're joined by a wonderful actress who is racking up an incredible CV of work. On the small screen she's appeared in The Mandalorian as Aliyah Kane and straddles both DC and the MCU, having appeared in Black Lightning and of course Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania. And 2024 is lining up to be another huge year. Coming up this summer, she's appearing in disaster movie sequel Twisters, but arriving next is her first lead role, starring opposite Kristen Stewart in the brilliant new romantic thriller Love Lies Bleeding. Here to tell us about her film and take us on her perfect trip to the movies is the excellent Katie O'Brien. Katie, welcome back to the show. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me back.
Don't be silly. It's an absolute pleasure to have you back on. Last time we spoke, you were in the wilds of Oklahoma shooting Twisters. Where do we find you today?
I'm at home today. And yeah, it was such a bummer last time too, because I think I wasn't allowed to promote anything that I was working on when the interview came out. So I was like, oh, cool.
Yeah, I was just about to say the same thing. We had possibly one of the most abstract conversations about a film in the case of Love Lies Bleeding that I think I've ever had. We sort of talked around it without saying anything about it.
That's I have to get used to doing that, unfortunately. Everyone's so secretive anyway.
I can't promise there won't be a moment like that during this interview. So do steel yourself for the moment where you go, I absolutely can't talk about that, and I'll still ask questions. So I have now seen Love Lies Bleeding. Holy smokes, what a movie. Congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, see, even if I wanted to be specific about it, it's pretty hard, right? Like, it's just insane.
Yeah, I mean, I was sort of trying to look for ways to describe it. And on Wikipedia, it's called a romantic thriller, which I think is massively reductive because it doesn't really do it justice. But you are incredible in it. I think it was quite a crazy way that you discovered this role of playing Jackie in Love Lies Bleeding was even out there.
Yeah. So apparently they had been reading like professional bodybuilders for the role and some WWE athletes, just like people who are professional athletes, and some actors here and there, I guess, maybe with bigger names. And they couldn't find the right person, so they put out a full-on open casting call. And I didn't see it because I'm not like, I try not to be on my phone too much, but a friend sent it like directly to me. And I saw it's, you know, A24 movie, which is, I love A24. Rose Glass, who's phenomenal. Kristen Stewart's leading a movie about a queer bodybuilder from the Midwest. And I'm like, that's me. Why did I not even get an audition? So I lost my mind and I made a PowerPoint presentation about why I should get the part. And I put my old bodybuilding pictures up, and I didn't know if it was like, maybe they saw a picture of me and they're like, no, we don't want short hair. So my old hair, I had like long, luxurious hair. And yeah, I told my team if I didn't get an audition, I would riot. And fortunately I did. And then a callback, and then chemistry read, and another and another. And finally they gave me the part.
When you first read this role of Jackie, I mean, did you get a full script when you first sort of got into the role and started learning about it, and you were called for an audition? Are they providing you with a full script at that stage?
No, I didn't know that it was even based in the 80s until after my callback. So I was like, oh, that kind of, you know, makes it even better, honestly. It was very limited information. So after the callback, I got the script and I was like reading it. I'm like shaking every page I turn. I'm like, what happens next? What happens to this poor woman? Like, and what you see on screen is actually like a much less traumatic version of what the script was. So,
oh, really?
Yeah.
That's interesting. So, I mean, you're reading this script, you're reading this part. I'm guessing, I don't know. I'm imagining like this is one of those parts that you read as an actor where you're like, I have to have this. This is because it's a hell of a part. It's a hell of a performance. Did you want it? Really want it from the start, the minute you saw that script?
I did. At first I had one of those moments of like, could I even do this? Because it was hefty. There's a lot going on with this character. And then on top of it, you know, you're training for a bodybuilding competition. So I really was a little scared reading it. There were, you know, the last scene, not to give any spoilers, but the big scene, if we will, I was supposed to be like butt naked originally. And I'm like, I don't want to do that. You know, there were some things where I was like, maybe we can talk around this or something. But it was a role that scared me, and it was maybe the first time that I had received a role that truly scared me. And I thought there's no way I'm going to improve as an actor if I don't at least try. And if I get it, you know, give it my all.
Do something that scares you. I love the fact your dog does the same as my dog. When the doorbell goes, it goes mad.
Yeah. And I don't even know who it could. Oh, FedEx. There you go. I don't know.
I can imagine this. I think for any actor, this is quite a daunting prospect. But you did six, I think I'm right thinking you said six auditions before that you got the part.
Yeah, it was, you know, your basic regular audition, a callback. We had a chemistry read. They brought me back in the next day with Rose to work with her again. Then I had to read with Larry Moss, who's this like incredible acting coach. And then they brought me back in again. I can't remember how many times they kept bringing me back in before I was finally like, are we doing this or not? Like, if I'm not the person for the part, I don't want to do it. Because I don't want to embarrass myself up there. If you don't think I can, I don't want to, you know, I just, if there's someone else that you're looking at, maybe give it to them. I just, and it wasn't just like out of frustration. It was just like, what are we doing? Like, I'm not going to read this any differently. I'm not going to perform it differently unless you tell me to. So you're going to get the same thing over and over again.
But I believe that after six auditions, Rose Glass did say, yeah, I knew it would be you from the first time you walked in the room.
Yeah. That's, I think she said, yeah, early on, she was like, oh, thank God. There's so much that goes on behind the scenes, and that's why I don't really take it too personally, because sometimes the reason that you lose out for a role is just so stupid. It's my dog. Hey, chill. That's my guard dog.
What's his name?
Hey. She's we had the whole litter, right? So we fostered a pregnant mom, had the whole litter. We had seven puppies. There was like a Disney theme they wanted for the foster organization. So we named them all like Disney side characters. And she was the dumbest one of the litter, like couldn't find her mom's nipple, like would just scream on her back trying to figure stuff out, got herself caught in the cage a couple times. So we named her Hey Hey after the chicken in Moana.
Oh, and you kept her. She was the only one you kept.
Yeah. It was between Piglet and Hey Hey. And I was leaning towards Piglet, and my wife, Kylie, she wanted this one, who was also one of the craziest in the litter. And I'm like, this is your first dog. You want this one? And she's like, I came home one day, it was the day we had to decide, and she's just snot dripping down, crying so hard because she was worried that we wouldn't pick Hey Hey. And I was like, all right, if it's like that, you get the dog for sure.
Oh, Hey,
she's
Hey.
Great. Though.
Hey, Hey.
She's great.
Yeah. Yeah. As a dog owner, I appreciate the joys of recording remotely when you have a dog.
Yes.
So, as I said earlier, like, it's called a romantic thriller. Like, that's such a crazy a way to describe this movie, because that could be anything from Fatal Attraction to Vanilla Sky. And this goes to some crazy places. It's darkly funny. It's scary in parts. It's sensual. And, like, you know, we're not going to do spoilers, but there's a bit in Vegas and there's a bit towards the end, which you touched on, no spoilers, which is so surreal that you're just like, whoa, this place, this film's gone to a crazy place. When people sort of say to you, oh, so what's this movie you're in about? Like Friends, when they go, tell me about your movie. What are you saying? How are you describing it?
Somebody said that it is, what did they say? It was like a romantic thriller on steroids, or a violent romantic thriller on steroids, or something like that. And I was like, you know, I think we check a lot of boxes there. It's a family movie, not for the family, but about family. I usually just say I play a bodybuilder that goes into a small town, meets Kristen's character, Lou, whose family is a corrupt criminal, you know, organization or whatever. And we fall in love, and chaos ensues. And then I tried to warn people that you think it's going to be a normal movie, and then it just takes a deep dive. Mm. And they don't believe me.
More fool them. They get a shock. Like I said at the start, I loved it. I really loved it. Let's talk about the physical side of playing Jackie as well. So where were you in terms of how much training you need to do, from where you were physically before shooting to what you wanted to look like and to portray a professional or on the way to becoming professional female bodybuilder? Was that a lot of work, or were you sort of, was it you already sort of like on that track?
It's always a lot of work to get lean like that. And, you know, it's especially for screen, it's like, it's very specific type of, exercises and stuff. So, I always try to stay in shape. I think I was told about Ant-Man, you know, a week before, or not a week, maybe like a couple weeks before, I was told that my wardrobe was going to be pretty exposed. And then for Love Lies Bleeding, I booked the part 2 weeks before we started shooting. So, I always have to be a little bit in shape, and we were very fortunate that we shot chronologically. And that, that gave me some extra time, like an extra month and a half or so to get to like the performance, ready. But I was also, you know, it's 80s bodybuilding, so it wasn't, as dramatic as like a modern, bodybuilding cut would be, which was also awesome. I still, like, my trainer was, we were still trying to add a little bit of bulk while we were cutting, which is really, really hard to do. And I just did measurements for something, yesterday, and it was like, from my Ant-Man measurements to now, you know, it was like, oh my God, I put 3 inches on my legs. I've like put 4 inches on my shoulders. It's like, it's crazy to think about, but, yeah, so somehow I did bulk up while leaning out in a very short period of time, but it was like 3 hours a day of exercise before or after filming. And then they made my meal plan for me. So it was like, that's honestly for me the hardest part, because I love food. And I love food. So, and then weighing it out and figuring out your macros and everything is such a pain. So the fact that I just put it in a microwave, it's great.
So you were training, so 3 hours a day. So that is like, that's weights and stuff. Were you using the gym in the movie?
Yeah. If I, if I was able to, while we were on set in the gym, yeah, I would use what I could. The problem with it was they took all 80s equipment. So, they didn't quite have the same adjustments that we do now. So like, there's like a chest, machine, and I had to like stand up a little bit to use it or put some cushions or whatever, cause it's built for like big dudes. And then, yeah, I don't even know if they had a squat rack, you know? So there were some things that were missing, but it really was a thank God I can get this done at work situation.
I was talking to someone else, who bulked up for a movie, put on a lot of muscle for a movie. And then they were saying that what they did as well, which is, I've heard about it before. I think the first time I heard about it was Hugh Jackman on Logan, this 48-hour or 24-hour, I can't remember, water fast that a lot of people do to really accentuate the musculature and the veins and make them really pop. Was that something you do? Cause I've heard it's kind of dangerous.
It is. I only did it for the competition. And especially since, you know, we really went back and forth. No one forced me to do it. It was just kind of something I was like, you know, I just want to add as much authenticity to it as I can. But, you know, we were in New Mexico in the summer, so it was really hot. And I was like, I want to make sure that if I do this, we can do it safely. But discussed it with my trainer, and yeah, it wound up not being as bad as I thought it would.
So how long is it? Is it 24 hours or 48 hours? How long do you do?
It's gradual.
Right.
It's gradual. So you start out water loading. So you drink almost more than you normally would. And then I think it was like, can't remember exactly how I did it. So I drink a bunch of water, cut that in half. The next day I cut half of that. And then the day of the competition, I drank no water. The give and take was that morning I got to eat a stack of pancakes. And like for lunch, I got steak and chocolate, you know, so it was like trying to shove all that down my throat, but with no water, but it was still like, exciting for me. Cause that helps like bring out the pump. Cause otherwise you might show up flat, right? Like a lot of times when you're going to a competition, people will say you do the dehydration and then you also don't eat carbs. And then you'll show it's like, it's called being flat. Like your muscles don't pop. So okay. The carbohydrate helps muscles pop. So you look, you know, it's like, it's all a crazy craft and everyone has their opinions on how to do it. And I don't know. I had fun.
Yeah. So that the competition scene you're talking about is the Vegas scene. It's a great scene. Goes to, I'm running out of adjectives to describe just how crazy and weird this film gets at times, but that's one of them. That's one of them.
Yeah.
So you're planning on staying quite having a certain amount of muscle on you going forward? I only ask because last time we spoke, and I don't want to misquote you here, you were talking, which was a really interesting point, about how there are not enough roles out there for female actors with a certain amount of muscle on them. Do you feel that's changing? Do you feel like, obviously, you know, Love Lies Bleeding is an example of, you know, a movie where there is that role, but do you think there is still a lack of these roles out there?
Sometimes I think it can be a deterrent. I don't know. I think it might be changing a little bit as people kind of rally behind the concept, or also just like don't care what someone looks like. You know, I don't know. I think it is changing a little bit. You know, we're getting more women in higher roles as producers, as directors, as writers, showrunners, all of that. And I think that we for sure like to see a variety of bodies on screen. You know, we don't want to just see bodies through the male gaze. So I do think that there's a bit of a change, but it's funny. I auditioned for something a year ago and they told me I was too buff and couldn't find someone. And I auditioned again and the story changed. So it's just kind of funny how even a year, I guess, makes a difference. I don't know.
Let's talk about another movie you've got coming out. We'll talk more about Love Lies Bleeding as we go on our journey in a moment. But obviously, you've got Twisters coming out this summer, this July. A very, very different kind of film. That must be exciting, having these two movies like 3 months apart, very different films coming out.
Yeah, it was cool. It was like last year, I had Ant-Man and then Mandalorian pop, you know, back to back, which was really neat. And it just kind of it's like, oh, I'll do all my press right now. You know, it gives you a nice chunk to do it. And then you get to chill for the rest of the year. But yeah, I'm very excited for Twisters. I think it's going to be different than people expect. Lee Isaac Chung's the director. He's incredible. He has such a cool, unique vision. I'm excited to see what he does with it. I just saw, like, you know, tiny, tiny tidbits during ADR. And it made me want to watch more. And I was like really mad that I couldn't just sit there and watch all of it. But yeah.
Okay. Okay. So you haven't seen it yet. So for anyone who doesn't know, although anyone of my age certainly knows, this is a sequel to Jan de Bont's massive. I couldn't believe how big the original Twister was in 1996, half a billion dollars. So you grew up in Indiana. Now, I might be wrong. My U.S. geography isn't amazing, but that is part of Tornado Alley, isn't it? That is, like, Indiana sits partly in it's, that.
I think maybe there might be like a tiny chunk of it, but it tornadoes are actually shifting east now. So with changes to the environment and everything, they're actually starting to kind of hit busier cities and stuff too. So Tornado Alley is going to gradually change, but it is crazy because I was like, I asked Isaac, I was like, why do a tornado movie in Tornado Alley during tornado season? We had so many weather delays. It was wild. And like, I think they said the first day of shooting, I think they had like 11 tornadoes touch down around the area, which is insane. That's a lot. But yeah, Indiana, we do see our fair share. While we were filming, my parents' house got just like torn to shit. Like it wasn't a full tornado. It was a storm, but trees fell through the roof. Yeah. Yard was destroyed. Like it was a lot of damage. So,
Holy shit.
Yeah. Yeah. We definitely, we have the protocol. We have the weekly tornado sirens, which sounds like the resident or no, Silent Hill siren, you know, when it transitions. Yeah. So when I saw that movie, I was like, tornado, you know, but it was worse than a tornado, as it turns out.
Oh my gosh. I never even thought that. Obviously Oklahoma is definitely in Tornado Alley, and you were shooting in Oklahoma, shooting a tornado. That's mad. I mean, authenticity is one thing, but
yeah, it was on location in the middle of nowhere. Like our locations were coordinates, you know? So we're like, where are we today? No idea.
Katie, we are going to talk more about your movies, including Love Lies Bleeding, as we go on our journey. But as you well know, this is your second time on the show. So we are going to leave this reality and enter a dimension of pure film where our virtual cinema awaits. You are our guide. We are your audience. Katie, let's go on your second perfect trip to the movies. So I will say, before we enter our temple of film, because it is your second time on the show, I did say beforehand, let's just do sequels. Because I'm not a stickler for rules, you don't have to just do sequels. You can do whatever you like. We'll see what happens. But we push open the doors to our temple of film and find ourselves in the foyer. There's an excited buzz, as there always is in a cinema foyer. The hum of anticipation. It's your perfect cinema trip, Katie. Who have you picked, living or dead, to go with you?
Who have I picked? You know what? I'm going to go with you.
What?
Let's go. Let's do a movie.
Wow. In hundreds of shows, I have never been asked as the plus one by a guest. So, Katie, thank you. I'm honored.
I'm honored. This is going to be great. It'll be a good, I feel like I will get an educational experience through that. So it'll be selfishly for me.
Well, I am proud to be your guest on this journey. So it is me and you going to the cinema. Are you sure you don't want to pick anyone else? I'm not saying I'm a terrible cinema guest. I talk a lot, you know, depending on what movie you've picked, I might talk a lot to you.
Okay. If it's terrible, that's fine. If it's great, I'll be like, you got to stop talking, but it'll be fun. It'll be a learning experience. Yeah. Cause I don't know if I pick some random dead person, they might talk a lot too. They might be like, what is happening in front of me? Like, come on, Cleopatra. Yeah.
Yeah, Cleopatra, she's been dead for thousands of years. She hasn't spoken for a long time. She's going to have a lot to say.
A lot all to right. say, yeah.
A lot. Oh, Cleopatra is a nightmare. Right, okay. There's a clock on the wall reading a specific time. What time of day are you and I going to the cinema?
I mean, we're still there. It's 11 a.m. Tipsy brunch happened, and we're awake. I can't go past like 9 or I'll just fall asleep. So
tipsy brunch. I remember this from last time. Some cocktails. It was nice cocktails. A few cocktails before going to the cinema. What is your cocktail of choice at the moment? Do you have to? I'm sure you don't. In fact, I think you're probably allowed to drink more because you work out so much. But do you know what I mean? No, in the sense that people who don't exercise and drink end up very large very quickly. However, like, do you have to manage like that? Are there cocktails that are better for someone who has to sort of look after their body more than someone like me?
I have Crohn's disease. Before that, I'd be like, let's go. I could do whatever, just slam anything. But now I'm kind of, it's like one or two drinks and I'm done. I can't do anymore.
Okay.
Yeah. It definitely depends on what cocktails they have. I tend to be, if it's like some form of awesome margarita, I'm doing it. It's my go-to.
I'm there. That genuinely is my favorite cocktail. I realize that some people sort of frown on it because I don't know that perhaps it has the class of, say, an old fashioned or something. But, you know, it's what I like. I like tequila. I like a spicy margarita.
Me too. Yeah. I can do an old fashioned if I have to be classy. If we're at a cigar bar or something, whatever.
Right.
But we're at Tipsy Brunch, so.
Perfect. That's perfect margarita time. Done. All right. You have booked the tickets for our trip, Katie. Where in the auditorium are we going to be sitting?
We will sit, last time I think it was middle left, but today there happens to be one of those nice rails in front of us. And we're going to sit right in the middle and we're going to put our feet on the rail. It's going to be great.
Hell yeah. You see, I don't know whether we talked about this last time. So if I'm repeating myself, then I'm embarrassed because I shouldn't have even said it the first time. But I have to have an aisle seat, probably because of the margaritas, probably because of the wheat bladder. But the bar means that I can sit in the middle and then duck under the bar to get to the toilet.
It's great. Yeah. That's my whole thing with like 3-hour movies now is I'm like, I'm getting older. I'm going to have to go to the bathroom.
It's true. It's true. I mean, Oppenheimer, that was a 3-bathroom movie for me.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. I missed the bomb going off. I've heard. Yeah.
Oh no.
It's fine. It's fine. I watched it again.
Okay.
And I did a 48-hour water fast and then went to see Oppenheimer.
Right. And you were just ripped.
I was so ripped. Right then. So the final thing you and I need before we leave the foyer, the air is full of wonderful smells. All manner of snacks and foodstuffs are available at various counters. What are we choosing to eat?
So I will say during Twisters, we had a lot of downtime because weather. And my buddy Tunde, who's also in the movie, and Brandon and I, we would go to the movies like all the time. And I got hooked on the little kid boxes where it's just enough popcorn, a tiny drink so you don't maybe have to pee, and then this tiny little thing of fruit snacks. And it's just, it all comes in one little box and it was perfect.
So, and you're allowed to purchase that? Because I mean that seriously. Like some places, like, oh, that's, like, I've tried to order off the kids menu before. Like if you just want like really plain tomato pasta or something, and they go, that's the kids menu. And I'm like, but they let you order these children's boxes.
Just tell them that you're, it's like a Benjamin Button scenario or what's that Robin Williams movie?
Jack.
Yeah. Just be like, look, I'm 7 years old and this is what I want.
Obviously this is your perfect cinema trip. So you can have anything. So you're having, I love this, the kids' perfect size popcorn drink fruit mix box. When you were training for Love Lies Bleeding, you touched on it earlier, but how strict was your diet? What are the foodstuffs that you have to eat to gain a physique like that?
The nutritionist that they hired was phenomenal. So I had like chicken curry, I had burgers, I had all these, like, it was just like trying to keep it clean and healthy. So you know, the burger was a whole grain patty with turkey in the middle and some tomatoes and whatever, mustard, you know, so we're not adding a bunch of cheese and things like that. It was whatever she did was within the macros, no sugar. And then I usually saved it for the weekends, but on the weekends I was allowed a 2-hour cheat window where I was able to one day eat whatever I wanted within a 2-hour window. So, yeah.
Within reason though, like as in, I mean, like you can't just eat everything you can eat in 2 hours, or you could.
I guess technically I could. I just, there is a point where you just don't feel well if you do. So, but yeah, I was able to have ice cream. I was like, I really had to be like, are you sure? And he's like, yeah. So I did. Yeah, it was a good time. But, you know, oftentimes I would save that because my wife came out with me. So I'd save it for like a date night. You know, we'd go get a, I don't know, some pasta or something.
That's fascinating. Because I mean, look, I'm a layman when it comes to all of this. But like, I always thought it was like high pro, like no carbs. Like you've just got to have a really high protein diet.
High protein is important for muscle retention. And on top of that, I did like my workouts. I would do fasted. So fasting in this instance was 2 hours after eating or more. And I would take amino acids, which is kind of the building blocks for protein. So it's all just trying to retain muscle. And that's why you do high protein and then also build. But the carbs are essential for energy. So for me, I know a lot of people are really into this keto diet. It doesn't work as well with women because it's a hormonal thing. It tends to be a little more tolerable with men. So yeah, high carbs or reasonable carb, and then fiber, veggies, nutrition basically is really important. And then, yeah, you still need healthy fats, but we're trying to do as little of that high animal fat as possible, or like, you know, red meats and things like that.
Is it strict in terms of the timetable you have to keep? I only ask, I was once, this was again, weirdly, another Hugh Jackman story when he was like really like, you know, staying in shape for Logan. I was at a premiere and he had to have a steak brought to him at a specific time. Like he had a window of time where he needed to eat this steak because it was part of a plan for his physique that was mapped out for him.
Yeah, everyone's different. When I was doing competitions originally, like 10 years ago, I ate like every 2 hours or something. I would have smaller meals, but every 2 hours. And it was a lot. This I ate 3 times a day. And it was with a 5-hour gap. So my breakfasts were nasty. I mean, they're like hulking plates of eggs and sauce or whatever was in it. Giant thing of grapes or something and oatmeal. It was like insane breakfast. And then, you know, lunch, dinner. I think people were kind of surprised with how much I was eating. But yeah, it was 5-hour gaps between for insulin timing. But yeah, it's like everyone's got their own process. I remember like David Corenswet, when we were filming Twisters, he booked Superman and then we had like the strike and everything. And he came back and he's just like, he's like, oh, I got time now. And he's eating like a whole thing of sushi or whatever. So I think the amount of muscle they had to put on or something must have been different than what I had to do. So I was very comfortable with the amount of food that I was eating. I would be extremely uncomfortable having to bulk that much. And this is pretty sustainable for me, especially while filming. Like to tell me, okay, eat 3 meals a day is super sustainable. And not have to worry about, oh, you know, they don't have the right nuts today or something. So yeah, it really did make it as easy as possible. And the lack of sugar was interesting because I found that after, and even now to this day, I don't crave sugar as much. So if I do, it's like in the form of a fruit or something, but I'm not like, oh, I want candy. Like it's the thought of eating a bunch of candy kind of makes me sick.
Right, let's leave the foyer. We have everything we need and make our way down the corridor towards the auditorium. Now, the corridor's looking pretty bare at the moment, so I'm going to put up some posters of your most important movie memories. And the first poster I'm putting up depicts, Katie, your fondest movie memory.
I think I've had a few, but the first time that I saw a movie in the drive-in, and I think we mentioned how much I like really love the drive-in experience. I remember so little of it, but I loved, it was Pinocchio. And I was like, and it might've even been a back-to-back like Lion King Pinocchio experience. I can't really remember, but I just remember thinking we're outside in the truck watching a movie and this is so cool, but what am I watching?
So this, were you quite young at this point then? Or
Yeah. Because when did Pinocchio come out? I mean, yeah, I was a baby. I really had no comprehension of, I was like, okay, so if I lie, my nose is going to grow. Got it. Or, oh, you can turn puppets into humans. That's creepy. That's really creepy, actually. It was unsettling.
Yeah. Disney taught us some very important life lessons at a very early age. So tell me, like, we don't really have them here. Why is the driving experience for you? Like, what is so much fun about seeing a movie at a drive-in compared to sitting in an auditorium?
It feels a little bit freer. There's something really cool that they do here in Los Angeles. The Hollywood Forever Cemetery puts on these huge productions too. So a couple of months ago, we went to a back-to-back Kill Bill. So they just showed volume one and volume two back to back. And you're just with this huge crowd of hundreds of people. We're all in our blankets, we're picnicking, we're out and we're, you know, this big screen and the reactions to those, you know, those intense moments, with hundreds and hundreds of people around you is wild. But I think, yeah, there's something cool about kind of, you know, making your own relaxation. It's almost like you're indoors in a way because you can kind of make it a more intimate setting. I guess you could bring a blanket to a movie theater, but I don't see that often, you know, or like your own pillows or whatever. And yeah, you can, if you needed to have a conversation in your car at a drive-in, you could, and not disrupt other people. We could do that together if you're a big talker, you know? And I don't know, it's a little bit more novel, I guess.
And how do you feel about when you start talking about the Kill Bill experience? Have you been to, like, do they do them in LA? They do them here called Secret Cinema, where it's a really immersive experience. Like, you sort of go and see a movie, but people are dressed up. They've built a set, and it's, you're sort of immersed in this whole almost like role playing world.
I would be shocked if they didn't do that here, but I haven't been to that yet, and now I want to.
Some of them are really good. Pick wisely. I went to one and it wasn't a movie I particularly wanted to see. And they toe a very fine line. Sometimes they're great and sometimes it feels like enforced fun where strangers are coming up to you going, I've got a secret message. Tell 007 this. And you're like, leave me alone. Where's the bar?
Yeah. The Exorcist would be really interesting to watch like that.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Like, whoa.
Right. Exactly. Right then, we're putting up a poster for Pinocchio as your fondest movie memory. The second poster we're putting up depicts your worst movie memory. What is your worst movie memory?
I don't know that I have like very many awful movie memories. I'll say it seems to be the case that if you go to a horror film late at night, like children sneak in and they're very loud. And the most recent one that I went to where I had, like, I lost my mind. It was at Scary Stories They Tell in the Dark. I love horror. And I grew up with those books. I was like, I got to see this, whatever. And there's a kid that's like having his own stand-up show in the back. And he's with his mom and he doesn't, like, she's not doing anything to tell him to be quiet. I think maybe she's enjoying it. I have no idea. But I'm like, at what point do I scream? You know, I was just barely keeping it together. So I think that might be one of the worst ones recently.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sitting here and I wasn't there, but I'm getting angry on your behalf. Like, I think anything that in a cinema, anything that rips you out of the immersiveness of the movie, that's already bad. But being angry, like getting angry in a cinema is like, it's like blasphemy. You don't want to be that person.
Yeah.
But Like, people just don't know the rules, man.
Yeah. And especially, you know, it's like a horror film too. So if you're out of it, then you completely lose the fun of the horror film.
Because you, I mean, obviously, you 90% of the movies, I imagine, you go and see are in America. And American audiences, I don't know if you've ever been to the cinema here in the UK, but like, I love the relationship American audiences have with the screen. Not people who talk to each other, but when they talk to the screen,
yeah.
Like US audiences like are so engaged with the film. It's like they're really like vocal with what's going on screen.
Yeah, when it's appropriate, it enhances the experience. Like watching Love Lies Bleeding at Sundance with a crowd, I had gotten to see it by myself and I was like, yeah, it's fun, you know? But with a crowd where they're, you know, applauding at the right moments, they're laughing at the right moments, it really is, it heightens that experience in a lot of ways, I think. But when it's the right time and when it's appropriate, you know, not if you're trying to, I don't know, make a name for yourself in the audience as the funniest person there, I guess.
So that time you saw it with an audience at Sundance, was that the first time you'd seen it with an audience? And if when was the first time you saw it with an audience? And where was your head at when the movie starts? What are you feeling the first time you watch Love Lies Bleeding with a packed auditorium?
Yeah, that was the first time seeing it with an audience. I always shake. Like suddenly the room is very cold. I'm just like, oh my God. I don't like watching myself. I don't like listening to myself. Like I freak out about it, but I will say it was such a responsive audience and such a fun audience to be in that it did kind of draw me back to the movie, which was really cool. And it's the first time that's ever happened for something that I've been in.
And as we touched on again, I would never ask you for spoilers because I want everyone to see this movie fresh. But like some of the craziest stuff, what was it like seeing the response of that audience when, like you said earlier, the movie takes this sharp right?
Yeah. Well, you know, there's some violence. And the first time that I saw the aftermath of some of it, I was shocked by how graphic it was. So it was fun to hear the shock. It was fun to hear like the very insane moments, the laughter, because you're just like, what is happening? But that people were still in it and in along for the ride was great. Applauding at those ridiculous moments was just really, really fun.
I bet. Yeah. I mean, I saw it in a press screening and even though they were film journalists who are, you know, they're a little bit jaded. You know, there were moments where you could just feel like gasps in the room. It was great. Great. Right then, next poster. The last performance, Katie, that brought you to tears.
I will say this gets to be a sequel, right? Because it's like the 100th rendition of it. But I was not expecting to go into Godzilla Minus One and like outwardly cry. Snot dripping out of my nose, like tears. The man, grown ass man next to me is sobbing. My wife is just, I brought tissues cause, I saw it twice. So like, anyway, that is the last movie that brought me to complete and utter tears.
It's an amazing film, isn't it?
Yeah, it's great. I kind of consider it like one of my favorite live action animes. Like the acting was so almost like over the top, but it was like so much like an anime, the script, the stakes, the analysis of human nature, that I think it was just like, I love anime. I think that's one of the reasons that it really touched me is I felt like I was kind of in that world, but it was live action. And I'm like, this is so good.
So good. Oh, that's the first mention of Godzilla Minus One on the show ever. And so I'm very happy to be putting up a poster for Godzilla Minus One as the last performance that brought you to tears. And the final poster we're putting up is your unpopular movie opinion.
I do struggle with a lot of sci-fi in general. The second something, I know, and I'm in it like all the time, but usually the second something goes into space or gets too like, you know, I kind of check out a little bit. So I, because our episode of The Mandalorian, or like that whole last season, was so Blade Runner heavy, I watched Blade Runner and I was like, okay, like I see where we like the set design, everything is very, you know, whatever, but I had to like actively focus to stay in it. And I do see, like, then I watched Villanova, you know, the Blade Runner, what is it, 2049 or something. And I was like,
Yeah.
It was just so visually stunning that I couldn't take my eyes off it. So I can definitely, if I'm really in the right mood, watch it. Or like Predator, I watched Predator recently and I was like, what is this movie? Why do we
the
care?
Original.
Yeah. I was like, why do we care about these people? They're just really buff. I don't know. Like, we have no reason
okay.
to care.
Okay. Sure, except it, but in the 80s, Kate, it didn't matter because it was Arnold Schwarzenegger. So you were built to care because it was like Arnie is going to fight an alien and Arnie has to win. It was Arnie. That was it. There was no, you didn't need a plot. You went, Arnie's fighting an alien. That'll do me.
That, you know, and maybe this could be my also unpopular opinion. Speaking of Arnold Schwarzenegger movies, I think that Jingle All the Way is one of the greatest Christmas films ever made. And I will die on that.
There she is. That's an unpopular opinion. That's the poster I'm putting up.
Awesome.
Let's leave sci-fi out of this. You love Jingle All the Way.
I love it. I rewatched it for the first time in years this Christmas. And I forgot Sinbad was in it. Like, it's just so, it's funny and just ridiculous. And it's a unique premise. It's not something that, like, I feel like I've seen really sense in the same way. I love it. I think it's great.
Just so to make sure we're talking about the same. For this is where Arnie is looking for, is it Turbo Man?
Turbo
Man. This toy.
Yeah. And then there's like a moment where, you know, they've all run out of Turbo Man, but they have this psychic and Sinbad's like, we don't want it. Nobody wants it. It's just so funny. I love it. Everyone should go watch it right now.
I am putting up a poster for Jingle All the Way as your unpopular movie opinion that it is. Remind me of the words you used again. How did you describe it?
It's one of the greatest Christmas movies ever made.
One of the greatest Christmas movies ever made. Right. Let's leave the corridor. We're going into the auditorium now. Now, there is a queue of people hoping to join you and me in the cinema. I've never had myself in this scenario before, but would you like to let them in? Do you want a busy auditorium?
No. No, maybe just a few people. They can space out, you know. Just a few people.
Well, just a few people go wild as they enter the auditorium. Now, before we get to the movie you've picked for us to play this brunch time after our margaritas, there are a few things I need to play on the screen. The first is the trailer for the movie you are most looking forward to seeing at the cinema.
Besides Twisters, obviously.
You can pick Twisters if you want.
Shout out Twisters. But also, what's the new Park Chan-wook with Robert Downey Jr.? It's like the spy or something.
The Sympathizer. Yes, that is the right one.
I think it is. Yeah. The Sympathizer. Yeah. So we got to see 25th or something anniversary of Old Boy at the cinema. Went in and I was like changed as a person.
So this was the first time you saw it?
Yeah, it was the first time I saw it. And then, because I saw Decision to Leave at like an LA premiere, and I was like, oh, this is really cool. Like, kind of a film noir-esque storytelling style. Park Chan-wook gave the introduction. He was hilarious. The movie had its funny moments. So I was like, oh, let's go see this Old Boy thing. And I'm like, what is this movie? It was a game changer for me. And then we saw Handmaiden, which was based off of Sarah Waters novel. So I'm like, wait a minute, this is Fingersmith. I've read this. So when I found out he was doing Sympathizer with Robert Downey Jr., I'm like, I'm losing my mind. Yeah.
Like me, are you a huge Robert Downey Jr. fan then?
I think he's great. I think he's really charismatic and unapologetic. I think it's really fun.
So, do you want another movie I'm most looking forward to seeing at the cinema? This is the moment where you go, cool, and we move on. Mission Impossible 8.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
Cool. So the cat's out of the bag. You are in it, aren't you? You can just nod, and I can cut this entire bit out. What can you say? Tell me what you can say.
I can say that Deadline made that announcement. Yeah.
It's good. It's yeah, good for me.
I don't know. I was surprised to see it. That's for sure.
Really?
Yeah. We'll talk about it later.
Good chat.
Yeah.
Good chat. Right then, moving on. So let's talk about putting on the big screen, the movie moment that makes you literally or metaphorically pump your fist in the air.
Again, it's not a sequel, but it is an adaptation of a musical. I thought about this last time too, and I should have said it, but in Dreamgirls, there's a moment where, what is it? It's the I Am Telling You song or whatever, where Jennifer Hudson hits that like, it resonates this note at the end where she's just like letting it all out. And I'm like, every time it just gives me chills. It's insane. She's like, deserves that, what do you call it? Where you have all of the awards. She's cut. EGOT.
Emmy, Grammy, Oscar, Tony. Right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. She does. Okay. I have, a fist pump moment from Love Lies Bleeding, which is your final scene. And again, we won't talk in depth about it. Your final scene with Ed Harris. I think you called it the big scene earlier. Amazing scene. What was it like working with the legend Ed Harris?
I'm obsessed with him. he's so good. So I think they did like, you know, the audience screenings and stuff where they got feedback and whatever. And the movie was like 2 hours long or something. And I think now it's an hour and a half. So like half hour of that was Ed and my stuff. Like there were whole side scenes and stuff that you'll never see. And working with him was probably the first time in a project of this scale, at least, that I was completely transported. Like he is so good, and or our chemistry was just so spot on, I don't know, that I didn't feel like I was acting. I didn't feel like I was in a movie. I just felt like I was in that moment in a way that was like addictive. Like I don't know how else to describe it, but it was all him. He's really phenomenal, and he's very good at, you know, there were moments in our car scene where we had an extra like 10 or 15, it felt like minutes before we were able to turn back around. And we just kept doing the scene as if we were in the car driving back to Albuquerque from Vegas. We just kept going and not starting the scene over, just improvising. And it was absolutely incredible. And there were moments where there's like one scene that got cut where like I'm on the ground and I got this crazy wig, right? Like it's a wig. And you could see
the perm wig. Yeah.
You could see the lace. And I'm like on the ground sobbing. It's like right before he's doing some stuff. Anyway, and it's like a really emotional moment. And he has to keep like taking my hair and covering the lace. And he just takes it back a couple steps and starts the line kind of back to where, you know, it makes sense to start. And it was just so masterful that I'm like, okay, I have to learn, take as much as I can from this guy. So yeah, love Ed. 10 out of 10 would work with him again. He's incredible.
So when you're improvising in the car, still in character in the scene, as though you were doing the scene, are you saying that was in between takes? So you're not even being filmed. You're just keeping
They kept the camera rolling. We had a lot of issues with that car scene that they just kind of had to work around in editing and stuff. But just in terms of the rigging and the road, I don't know. There's a lot of stuff that that kind of went on behind the scenes where it was just like you're just doing the best you can with the time that you have in this indie film, you know, like, yeah. So it was like just a long lull before our reset.
Yeah, it's a great scene. It's great watching the two of you together. I'm sad to hear there was more of that I didn't make it into the movie. But again, it's that age old thing, you know, if you don't know,
right, yeah,
it's been cut, then you don't miss it. But now you find out it's been cut, you're like, no, I definitely want to see that.
It was an adjustment for me, for sure. Yeah, because I was like, no, every scene that I was in was so important to Jackie and her character and the arc and blah, whatever. And It was a huge adjustment for me to understand the movie, I guess, again.
Right. Let's play another moment.
Yes.
Next, this is what you consider cinema's most shocking moment.
Most shocking moment. I will bring it back to Oldboy then, because the last, 15 minutes of that movie is just like one slap in the face after another. I mean, the man found out that he was intimate with his daughter, which is excessively taboo. You find out that this guy that's been hunting him the whole movie, I'm going to ruin the whole movie if you haven't seen it, was also incest. You know, it was like a whole thing of incest that you were not probably expecting going through this Count of Monte Cristo like journey originally. And then he cuts his tongue off. He humbles himself and embarrasses himself in a way that I feel like a lot of American actors are afraid to do. Because I'm so obsessed with people that are able to play someone who has been so deeply humbled that they would like drop to their knees and like kiss another man's feet. You know, like I was so blown away by that scene the whole time, jaw completely open.
We're playing the end of Oldboy. I might have to go to the bathroom when this is on, because I don't know that I could ever sit through it again. Once is enough for me. But yeah, you're absolutely right. It's truly shocking. All right. Another shocking moment, which I think might make the list in future. I'm not going to spoil it, but you mentioned it earlier. I mean, what Dave Franco is amazing in Love Lies Bleeding, and that scene that you two share. Wow, working with him on this, like, that's crazy.
Yeah, you know, it was such a small, intimate cast. It was really fun. I think I only got to work with him like one or two days. But he's so charming, so sweet, so professional. I think there's a movie where he goes into introduce me to Ed's character, and he trips on the way in. That happened. He just kind of tripped a little, you know, he's...
And, oh really?
Yeah, and he goes, "Oh, look out for the step, you know, don't embarrass me, whatever." It was just so charming. We have our first scene together is pretty interesting. And he just brought a humor to it, and he is just such a great professional dude. So, yeah, it was a blast to work with him. And it's so hard to see him as such a dick, you know, like it's so hard to see him that way, but he really pulled it off.
It's good acting. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because he really does. He really does. Right then, we're nearly at the movie you picked for us to watch tonight. But what line or piece of dialogue from a movie has most affected you, Katie?
Most affected me. I have to pull it up because I'm as bad as I am with quotes. But I did try to keep this. I tried to keep it to the sequel theme.
Good. Okay. This fits the very loose parameters of going for sequels. I love that.
The Dark Knight, you either die a hero or live long enough to see yourself become the villain, I think is very interesting, especially when we're talking about the world of vigilantism or even, politics in general, too.
That's interesting. Tell me why that resonates with you in terms of its application outside of the film.
I think it's dramatic for sure. But I think when you're really putting yourself out there and you're taking really strong stances, it's something that one day you will be vilified for one way or another. I feel like even if it's like when you put yourself out there, you set yourself up for, in a way, failure. But you got to do it. So I don't know. It's interesting.
It's that thing, you know, you stick your head above the parapet, you run the risk of slings and arrows, but you never stick your head above the parapet. You're never really saying or doing anything that might be true to you, but might run the risk of like you say, having you vilified in the future.
Yeah. I mean, it's like the now we're doing superhero quotes or whatever, Spider-Man, you know, with what is it? Great power comes great responsibility. I think that, you know, those kind of things intertwine. It's always difficult to be, you know, is it anyone ever really a hero? Or are they always remembered that way? People will find a way to vilify them. You know, it's really interesting. We're like, I always love in in Shakespeare and Julius Caesar, where, you know, Caesar's killed and the crowd, sorry, spoilers. The crowd is out there and they're like, screw Caesar, he sucks. And Mark Anthony's like, yeah, he does suck. He gave you this, he gave you this, he gave you this. And they're like, oh, maybe he wasn't that bad. You know, it's just so funny how people just flip on a dime.
Yeah. Yeah. Brilliant. It's a great quote. It booms out through the Dolby Atmos speakers and also coming through the speakers. Our last question before we get to the movie you have picked for us is what you consider, Katie, the best use of music in a movie.
We'll say this is a sequel too. I don't know. And I'm just doing it as a joke almost, but Lego Batman, all of the songs are perfection. And I think that movie needs to be brought up. Also, a little more seriously, like the new Spider-Verse movies have some of the coolest uses of music and animation that I've ever seen.
I'd say, you said earlier you're an anime fan. It's incredible to see, because I love anime as well. But like when Western, let's call it animation, does something that is just so like inspiring and sort of like wow, like visually, like across the Spider-Verse was like it took what Into the Spider-Verse did and then just multiplied it by a billion.
Yeah, and I've heard rumors, and I think it's true that there are different versions out there too, where there's just slight changes. But I haven't watched it enough to confirm that.
That whole sequence with the big chase sequence in it with all the different spider people. Oh, it's just poetry.
Yeah, it's great. I love those movies. I think they did. I mean, they killed it.
Right. I'm putting, I don't know. Let's play a montage of all the songs from Lego Batman and Will Arnett being hilarious, to the Spider-Verse movies. Great.
Incredible.
Right. We are here. We've arrived, Katie. It is time now to announce to this smattering of people and myself in the auditorium. I'm very excited to find out what are we watching?
We are watching one of the best sequels of all time, which is Sister Act 2.
Sister Act 2, back in the habit.
Back in the habit with my buddy Bill Duke as the director. That's what we're watching.
So this fascinates me. This film has come up recently a couple of times, in fact, as an unpopular movie opinion, as in people say Sister Act 2, Back in the Habit, is a brilliant film, even though the general consensus on Rotten Tomatoes, it has, I think, 18%. So tell me why we're watching it and why it's the greatest sequel of all time.
What? 18%? Are you kidding me? I thought it was universally known that this is one of the best sequels of all time. We are watching it for Lauryn Hill. Cheryl Lee Ralph is in it. She's phenomenal. There's great music. It's fun. It's a fun little message, you know? Yeah, I think it's a great movie. Why are people hating on it? Whatever, we're watching. We're going to sing along. I'm going to sing every song. I'm a big musical nerd, though, so.
You're a big musical nerd. You love a musical.
Yeah, I love a good musical. I work out to musicals. Like Hadestown has been on repeat in my iTunes forever.
Does it work in stages? Is there like, you know, a warm-up musical song and then the really intense like cardiovascular like musical song? Do you use Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious ever?
No, I think that would be too much.
Yeah.
No, I don't have a playlist. I just play the musical in order and I work out.
Right then. Well, I will admit now, I've never seen Sister Act 2. So this is a first for me. I'm seeing it for the first time.
I'll be the one talking throughout the whole movie this time. I'm going to be like giving you little tidbits. I'll be like, did you see Sister Act 1? Okay, this is why this makes sense now. Yeah, it'll be good.
Right, the curtains are closing on Sister Act 2. Back in the habit, the guests are milling out, smiling, thanking you for taking them on an incredible post tipsy brunch trip to the movies. But before you go, it is, as you well know, Katie, time for a mystery question. It's time for What's in the Box?
I saw you with the box. What was in the box? Oh, what's in the box?
So this is a question that's coming from one of our dear listeners. Mm. I'm seeing it for the first time. Okay. So this is from our listener, Angela. And Angela says, I know you've appeared in the MCU, but now that they're rebooting DC into the DCU, would you like to work with James Gunn? And would you like to play Wonder Woman? Because I think you'd be great. Thank you, Angela, for that question. Katie, over to you.
I have been in the DCU. I was in Black Lightning, and but that was on CW. People were like, oh, but that's Arrowverse. I'm like, which is DCU? Anyway, look, I would love to work with James Gunn. Absolutely. I think he's hilarious. I don't know. I don't know. It's such a complicated question. It's like, do you want your life to be completely blown up? Would you want to be Wonder Woman? I don't know. That seems like a lot, but maybe a villain. Maybe, I don't know. I'm not going to turn down an audition or opportunity that would help me pay my bills, though. So.
You got to keep hey in the finest dog food out there.
I do. Or at least alive. Yeah. I got to keep the roof over our heads. You know, there's a lot. It's expensive to live in LA. It's ridiculous out here.
That sounds about right. Yeah. I don't know LA that well. I like Silver Lake. Silver Lake, I quite like. That's a nice part of LA.
It's lovely. Also very expensive.
Like, you've got that thing going on that we have here, gentrification. Like, they take rundown areas and they start building expensive condos, and suddenly all the chains move in and everything costs loads of money.
Yeah.
Well, we don't need to end on economics. So instead, let me say congratulations, Katie, on Love Lies Bleeding. Absolutely fantastic film. You're fantastic in it. I cannot wait for people to see it when it opens here next month. So you got to be happy, and deservedly so.
Yes, I'm very, very excited. I'm stoked to hear what the UK thinks, for sure.
We love our weird shit, and it's got a lot of weird shit in it, so I think it's going to go down a storm. Katie, your taxi has arrived to ferry you back to reality, but before you go, let's recap your perfect trip to the movies. You are going to the cinema with me, and you are going after a tipsy brunch with some delicious margaritas. You are going to be sitting in the middle behind the metal rail so you can put your feet up. And to eat, you are having a kids' cinema box. We are putting up posters in the corridor, first for your fondest movie memory, which was seeing Pinocchio at a drive-in. Your worst movie memory was a loud child while you were trying to watch Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. The last performance that brought you to tears, Godzilla Minus One. And your unpopular movie opinion is that Jingle All the Way is the greatest Christmas movie ever made. We're entering the auditorium and playing a trailer for the new Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr. series, The Sympathizer. We are then playing the moment that makes you pump your fist in the air. It is Jennifer Hudson hitting that note in Dreamgirls. The movie moment you consider most shocking is the end of Old Boy. The line or piece of dialogue that most affected you is, you either die a hero or live long enough to see yourself become the villain from The Dark Knight. And the best use of music in a movie is all the songs from Lego Batman. Before we screen in this auditorium the movie you've picked, the greatest sequel of all time, Sister Act 2, are back in the habit. That is your perfect trip to the movies. All that remains to say, Katie, is, have you had a good time?
Oh, always. Yeah, you're amazing. It's fun. I'm glad. I hope you enjoyed Sister Act 2 as much as I did.
I bloody loved it. The best sequel ever. It's as good a sequel as Jingle All the Way is a Christmas movie.
Yeah. I have great taste all the time.
And as Katie's cab carries her out of this dimension, away from our virtual cinema, back to reality, we must all leave her movie paradise as well. But before I say my final farewell for this episode, don't forget you can find the full video for today's Katie O'Brien interview, and indeed for every guest, over on our Trip to the Movies YouTube channel. So please head over there. And as I said at the start, help us grow the podcast by hitting subscribe. And that really is it. I'll be back next week when another guest fills our cinema with their celluloid dreams as they take us on a trip to the movies. Bye-bye.